Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to the HDFC Life Insurance Company Limited conference call. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touch-tone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Vibha Padalkar, MD and CEO, HDFC Life. Thank you, and over to you.
Thank you for joining us for the call today to discuss our acquisition of Exide Life and its subsequent merger with us. Our press release and deal rationale presentation is available on our website as well as that of the stock exchanges. I have with me Suresh Badami, Executive Director, Neeraj Shah, CFO, Srinivasan Parthasarathy, Chief Actuary, Ishwari Murugan, our appointed actuary, and Kunal Jain from Investor Relations. I will run through the contours of the transaction and would be happy to take questions post that. While we continue to grow faster than the overall life insurance market, we have always been actively seeking opportunities to supplement that with inorganic growth. Our key considerations while evaluating potential targets have consistently included a high-quality backbook, addition to our distribution capability, ease of execution, amongst other factors. In line with this thought process, we are pleased to announce the acquisition of 100% stake in Exide Life Insurance from Exide Industries. The acquisition is being done via issuance of 87 million shares at an issue price of Rs. 685 per share and a cash payout of Rs. 726 crore, aggregating to Rs. 6687 crores. Upon completion of the transaction, Exide Industries will hold a 4.1% stake in HDFC Life. This transaction is expected to be a two-step process, with the merger of Exide Life into HDFC Life being initiated on completion of its acquisition. The entire transaction, including both the acquisition and subsequent merger, is subject to obtaining the relevant regulatory and other approvals. The proposed transaction will strengthen our distribution network and give customers access to a wider bouquet of products as well as sales and service touchpoints. Employees and agents will also benefit from a larger, stronger organization that realizes the synergies arising out of complementary business models built on similar ethos. This amalgamation will unlock significant value for all stakeholders. Over the recent years, we have consistently articulated our focused approach in building a high-quality agency channel. As a recap, our agency channel grew by 49% in quarter one, contributing 15% to overall new business and had a 13-month persistency of more than 90%. We added the most number of agents amongst private life insurers in quarter one. On successful completion of this transaction, Exide Life will add 40% to the top line of HDFC Life's agency business and 35% to our agent base. We will also benefit from some deep relationships in their other distribution channels, including broker, direct and cooperative banks. Exide Life complements HDFC Life's geographical presence and has a strong foothold in South India, especially in Tier 2 and 3 towns, thus providing access to a wider market. Further, a good quality, predominantly traditional and protection-focused business will augment the existing embedded value of HDFC Life by approximately 10%. The embedded value of Exide Life as on 30th of June 2021 is Rs. 2711 crore, implying the combined EV to be more than 30,000 crore. HDFC Life scale, market-leading digital and product innovation capabilities, and prudent risk management strategy will aid in optimizing cost and achieving higher margins for the acquired business. We expect to realize these synergies over a period of 18 to 24 months. The private market share is expected to get a boost of over 1% and assets under management of HDFC Life is expected to increase by approximately 10%, taking it beyond Rs. 2 trillion. This transaction will enhance value for all stakeholders by improving new business margins via operating leverage and product mix optimization. We look forward to the completion of the proposed transaction in the coming months. Details with respect to the proposed transaction have been uploaded on our website. We are happy to take questions now.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on the touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Dhaval Gada from DSP. Please go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for the opportunity. I had one question with two parts to it. The first part is related to the business. So if you look at Exide, it has a track record of, almost flattish premium growth for last 3 and 5 years, whichever CAGR you want to see. If you look at VIF growth, it's been about 5-6% CAGR. EV growth about 6-7%, market share declining. So what really has excited in this business for you to, choose Exide? So that's part one. And the second part is on the valuation. If I just take a step back in your earlier attempt to acquire inorganic, which was Max, at that point of time, you were willing to pay about approximately 6 times VIF. In this case, you're almost paying like 4 times VIF on the book. For a business which is, seeing market share degrowth, decline and overall, business, there's no strong points, at least from a financial standpoint, to look for. So what's the rationale on the valuation side? Yeah, those are two.
Yeah, thanks for that. We have to look beyond the obvious, because the obvious is anyway what everyone is going after. And agency channel is, in my opening comments that I mentioned, he is building your own, and what Exide Life has done very well is build their agency channel. And like I mentioned, it is a very meaningful increase, anything between 38-40% based on the number of agents and the volume of business. And also if you were to look at geography, so it complements our geography. And that's where, Dhaval, the nuanced approach to growth starts becoming even more essential than, like I mentioned, the obvious aspect to growth. And that's where when we looked a little bit deeper, they were present in geographies, especially in the south, in several places having market leadership, and beyond the metros, so tier 1 and tier 2 towns. To your point on their market share has largely been steady at about 1.3%, so no concerns on that front. Like with a lot of smaller companies, scale starts becoming an issue beyond the point. And that's exactly also the reason for us to get into this transaction. Also, if you were to look at synergies, their variable costs are very much in line. It's the fixed cost because of, again, scale issue. And so combination of being able to offer our products to their distribution eventually post regulatory approvals and thereby increasing on productivity, deep connect with their distribution, and so on. So that's as far as the what was the rationale part of it. In terms of your valuation, I think comparing with some deals that might have happened 4 or 5 years ago, I think market has moved significantly. So today, this deal has happened at a 35% discount to market multiples. And this is excluding HDFC Life in that bucket of companies. So excluding HDFC Life, the listed players and proxy listed players, it's a discount of 35%. Also, they have 10 lakh customers. And number of policies that they have is fairly formidable. And also that's the point in terms of number of customers. So being able to, with our ability to cross-sell, upsell various products as they are rolled out of our stable and which don't exist in that company today is really the USP of this deal. Neeraj, anything you want to add?
No, but you covered it. I think in terms of agency, we all realize in terms of how challenging it can be to build a balanced agency franchise that we have with a lot of work over the past few years. And a 40% accretion to that is not a small number. It would have organically taken a fair bit of time, anywhere between 18 to 24 months to build that kind of scale and that kind of quality. So you need to put that in perspective as well.
Got it. Thanks and all the best.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Suresh Ganpati from Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Here, FY21.
Suresh, hi, are you there?
Yeah, I'm there. You're able to hear me? Yeah, what is the operating ROEV for FY21 for Exide Life? Hello?
Yes. You know, Suresh, some of these numbers are not in the public domain. And as you'll appreciate, until the deal is done, it would not be right to put some of those numbers in the public domain.
Reason, Vibha, I'm asking this question is because if you're saying you're paying a 30% discount, I have to look at it in the context of ROEV. For example, you guys generate 18%, the other players also generate a good 17-18%. So we just wanted to have a like-for-like comparison because we want to know whether the business is actually profitable or not. So therefore, that metric becomes very important. Yeah.
Right. So rather than ROEV, I think I can share that their new business margins last year have been accretive. For a company of that size, it's in the positive zone. The pre-overrun margins are very much in line with our pre-overrun margins. And so, and the context of what I mentioned, if you look at their cost ratios are about 60% higher than our cost ratios. So just in terms of scale benefits that can start coming through and thereby reducing the overrun, and given the robust nature of their pre-overrun margins, this should be accretive. Operating variances are negligible, very much under control, and that's, I guess, your answer in terms of the ROEV.
Okay. The other question is, because of course it looks like the biggest reason for acquiring this company is the agency channel, right, and the scale that you get and, the subsequent benefits. So can you clarify, again, can you give comparisons as what has been the agent productivity, agent persistency, all the comparable metrics for Exide Life? I'm sorry, I'm asking these details because these are very important from an acquisition merit point. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So their persistency has been steadily increasing, especially the 13-month persistency. Their 61st month persistency is still being worked on. There is a lag versus, and I think comparison with the top three listed players also within their set of size of companies, they're very much in the zone. The 13-month persistency, that's in the public domain anyway. So that is, you can see that it is steadily continuing to increase. So it is right now at about 73%. I forget what your other question was. Yeah, so in terms of productivity, their productivity is higher. So when I say that this is going to add 40% to our APE, 38% to our APE and 40% in terms of their agents. Their agent productivity is slightly at a lower clip, and that's where we see opportunity also, given the bouquet of products, for us to be able to offer that to the agents and increase the productivity. So whether it is in terms of persistency, whether it is in terms of expense ratio, whether it's in terms of productivity, we see a delta that is reasonably low-hanging fruit, and that is a rationale for us looking at this transaction. They have also been profitable for the past 6-7 years. Their embedded value that we have, they have also disclosed. That has been validated by Towers Watson, and so reasonable amount of comfort on the back book. To your question, back book unwinding as well. So therein lies the upside. Because if you look at it, Suresh, if there's a entity that is very similar to where we are today, then the economics become very different. The whole rationale for this is we see that upside post-merger.
Sorry, one last question, Vibha, if I can squeeze in. Have you done the due diligence with respect to COVID-related claims on the book, which obviously you have done, but I'm just asking, is it well provided for, fully captured in the 2,700 crore embedded value?
Yes, we have looked at the COVID claim, very similar to what the industry has gone through and well provided for, yes.
Okay, thanks.
Not taking into account wave 3, similar to us, if there is a wave 3.
Okay, fine, that's it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepika Mundra from JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. So just one thing, you mentioned the difference between the pre-overrun margin and the actual VNB margin. Can you outline a time frame and plan to basically converge the two and bring it in fold with HDFC Life margin?
Let me just put the timelines. We are expecting maybe a 6-month timeline before getting regulatory approval for it to become our subsidiary, because the day zero happens at that point in time. So if you're looking at day zero around Jan-Feb, then we expect over a period of time between 12 to 15 months kind of a time frame for normalization to happen. Somewhat, some level of stretch is there, but that's the kind of time frame from today. So from today, 6 months, and thereafter, 12 to 15 months for the normalization. But it is 10% of our business, so we do expect us to anyway, meaning HDFC Life standalone, to anyway continue on its trajectory of margin expansion.
Okay, basically, if I got that right, after you've merged it, about 6-8 months to get the margin in line with the HDFC Life reported margin.
No, it will be closer to 12 to 15 months thereafter.
12 to 15.
Yeah,
okay, got it.
A merger will happen, 6 months from now is when we are hoping it will become our subsidiary. Full synergies will start coming through once the actual merger happens. So that's why. So earliest 12 months, outer limit 15 months.
Okay, and you mentioned that they are primarily in traditional and in the protection segment. So given that it's an agency-dominated model only, how do you, what is the plan for further product mix enhancement from Exide?
So, you know, they have astonishing level of, I mean, for a relatively smaller company, they have about 11% of protection. So they have done pretty well on that. So roughly about 70-odd% is par, about 13% non-par, protection, like I said, 11%, and unit linked is a very small 5%. And that's why the attractiveness of the way they've run their product mix. Would continue to see once it becomes a subsidiary, then it just, like I said again, becomes easier. But until then, I think they will continue on their product mix the way they have done, increasing protection, I would assume, continuing to grow on that front and keeping otherwise the product mix fairly similar, keeping a lid on unit linked and thereby ratcheting up in terms of their new business margin.
Okay, and just last question from my side, given that, we've been more cautious on adding the protection business, we are comfortable with the overall pricing underwriting in the past for Exide in the protection line?
Yes, because they actually retain lesser risk than we do on their books.
Okay.
They reinsure more.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Sure.
Thank you. Participants are requested to please limit the questions to 2 per participant. If you have a follow-up question, you may rejoin the queue. The next question is from the line of Abhishek Saraf from Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for the opportunity. So actually, one of my questions pertained to the product mix itself, which you answered earlier. So I just wanted to understand, means, do you also see some, like, there is obviously benefit on the agency side that you mentioned. On the product side, is there anything probably Exide is bringing to the table, or is it mostly we have they have similar kind of products. So you obviously dwelt about the product mix as such in terms of percentages, but are there any products which probably they might be adding to our SDFC Life stable? And second, if you can just give us some details on their distribution mix. So I understand it's more agency driven, but if you can give me some specific percentages around that, that will be very helpful.
Yeah, sure. On their products, yes, we also have some aspects to learn from them once the CCI approval comes through. But from an outside-in perspective, they do have some interesting products, especially in terms of term ROP. Also, they have a similar product with some variations to our Sanchay Plus product. So over a period of time, you know, every company does build from the base. So if HDFC Life has been the one to introduce a product construct like Sanchay Plus, then building from that continues to happen. And that's exactly what we see in Exide Life as well. So some features which are enhancements over the base that we have will always be there. In terms of your question on distribution, so currently about agencies around 60%. The broker channel is about 23%, a corporate agency like an SVC and others is 7, and a direct channel is 10.
Chairman, thanks a lot. Thanks for that.
Thanks, Abhishek.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Adarsh Parashampuria from CLSA. Please go ahead.
Hi, the band team. Good morning. Question on, like, if I go back to what HDFC Life was trying to do with Max, it was trying to enhance agency. So, you know, that was one of the rationales along with its size that time. And now one of the rationales is agency. And there's been a lot of time transpired between the two. Right? Organically, where have we gone in terms of ramping up that business? Because, you know, just going by the size of agency or the business generated, we've been a little behind. So I just wanted to understand how organically the agency has been built and how much of a hole does it plug for us or how much of a gap does it fill for us?
So I'll start off and then I'll request Suresh to add. You know, the agency channel amongst the top 4 or 5 players is in 2 parts. The top 3 players sell significantly more unit-linked products, anything between 50% to 75% and upwards. We have always believed that each one of our channels has to be standalone company-level margins. And that's exactly what our agency channel is, a high-quality margin NBM equivalent to company level or slightly higher. So, and by that construct, what it means is that we might be in the number 4 position, but we are, as a strategy, that is the intention. So you will find a steady growth like I just covered, wherein we have been growing anything between 40% or thereabouts in our agency channel, even against the pandemic. And if you look at a CAGR, we have grown at a fairly respectable 20% CAGR while ratcheting up on our persistency. Our persistency of agency channel today is better than our company level persistency, about 90%. And that was not the case during the periods that you're mentioning, which is about 5-6 years ago. Our persistency was significantly lesser. So a holistic growth of our agency channel in terms of both APE growth, persistency, product mix, and hence growth in VNB and having company level margin. So that was the objective, and to have a balanced product mix. So we do believe that we have stuck to the strategy that we had amongst ourselves articulated. And, you know, in our experience, it is not that difficult to grow any channel. Why only agency channel if one is focused on the top line growth? It is infinitely more difficult to grow it sensibly. So that one is not yo-yoing in terms of back and forth on reducing anything. It could be, for example, big ticket size cases, which agency channel used to sell a lot of. And then a lot of companies realize that this isn't good business, it isn't persistent business and so on. So rather than that, ab initio itself getting it right. Also, if you look at the bottoms-up approach in terms of our agent base, that has doubled over the past 4 to 5 years. Like I mentioned, in quarter one, we were the highest in terms of number of agents added in the private space. So there is a very calibrated approach, and that's why this opportunity makes a lot of sense, because we have brought our agency channel organically up to this point. We will continue to grow by that 20-odd percent CAGR that we have been growing, but this will give us a fillip of about 2 to 3 years.
So, Vibha, if I can add, I think you broadly covered it. But, you know, I mean, just to kind of give the background that we have been speaking on, our idea has been to kind of diversify our distribution. So, you know, the focus on the proprietary channels has been considerable over the last 4 or 5 years, especially on the agency channel. And like Vibha mentioned, we have managed an absolute CAGR growth on agency. The number of new and active agents has been consistently increasing. The quality of the agency book has been improving. Of course, in parallel, we have ensured that our banker partnerships continue to grow, as well as new partners on the bancassurance side. So even with that, the way agency has grown, they have shown a marginal increase in terms of percentage contribution to our overall business. What the Exide distribution will bring to our end is clearly a number of new active and vintage agents who are available. We can leverage their existing product as well as our product rates. There are a lot of agency-led programs that we have running. We have learned agency. If you remember, at the time of the Max merger, our agency was much smaller and probably even in consideration to the Max. But now we are the number one non-UL agency, business in the market, and a very profitable and high quality one at that, at 90% persistency. So we do believe that given the distribution which will come in markets where we would want to have a further presence with the kind of programs, and of course, not to say even Exide has been running a fairly good agency model. So the best practices of both will come into play. Product mix, like we have always mentioned, will be balanced. So, you know, we'll continue to focus on the core products. They have a fairly good PAR and protection business which comes in. So all in all, you know, you would think that organically we will be able to continue our growth in all the other markets. It's not that even organic in South for us will not grow. We will continue to grow that. But clearly a fresh distribution channel which comes in will increase our agency presence overall.
But no, that's helpful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Sanket Godha from Spark Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity. Given the whole story is about cost significantly improving in Exide Life and probably bringing it at par with HDFC Life in next 12 to 18 months after the merger gets done. So I just wanted to understand what are the low-hanging cost levers you can see in Exide Life, which can be substantially improved to bring back it to the similar ROEs what you are reporting or similar VNB margins what you are reporting. That's one what I have. And the second thing which I wanted to have is that whether Exide Life has a lock-in period after the deal, the 4% is what they will effectively be owning. And finally, what's the logic of paying cash again, given you could have easily done a share swap deal? Any reason why we are paying some 700 odd crores cash for the deal? Yeah, those are the questions I have.
Sure, thanks, Sanket. I'll answer the questions 2 and 3, and Neeraj can address the cost issue. In terms of the lock-in, there is a one-year lock-in for them. But what we understand from the counterparty is that they are very happy to stay as our shareholders. There's a huge opportunity, untapped opportunity in insurance, and they're very happy to continue into the foreseeable future. But this is really a question for them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Second aspect is on the cash. What the sellers wanted and had requested is that they would like to be cash neutral as far as the tax outgo. There will be a tax outgo for them. So this is just back solving for the tax that they would have to pay for the transaction. Neeraj, you want to take the aspect on cost synergy?
Yeah, sure. So Sanket, clearly, like we've discussed, the rationale for this is complementary geographical presence as well as creative distribution. The focus primarily is going to be to, of course, get all the regulatory approvals in place up, and consummate the merger while preserving value. Along the way, synergies will get realized. Vibha did mention about the difference in cost structures because of the scale. That is something that will find its way in the merge co over a period of time. Primarily, as you would be aware, there would be synergies around common operating costs on the infrastructure. There would be around logically any sort of synergies that could come along the way in terms of once the merge co takes effect in terms of human capital over a period of time. So some of these things will pan out in the course of the time that we've mentioned. Primarily, the idea is to be value accretive. For that, there'll be two aspects, operating synergies, of course, but also in terms of product mix optimization. So these are the two levers which will be used to try and get, while the VNB accretion will happen from day one, there will be time to get the margins close to the level that we are at. And that's going to be a factor. These two things will be play a role there.
Got it. But needed any branch rationalization or employees related stuff, which you can highlight that work probably which could significantly improve our, bring excellent cost ratio similar to our numbers then?
Yeah, so clearly there are opportunities in the areas that you mentioned, Sanket, but we will have to spend time to try and get through that over a period of time, as is you would appreciate. Priorities definitely would be to first get in the relevant regulatory approvals and put in the business in motion without losing any value. Alongside that, all this happens, there are areas that you did mention, apart from what I spoke about, that will work in tandem with the opportunity to optimize product mix, to be able to get the value to where we would like it to be.
Got it. Yes. Thanks. That's it so much.
Sure.
Thank you. A request to the participant to please limit a question to one per participant. The next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from MOSU Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. This should be introduced by HDFC Life, considering that IRDA may now look at the grant with a different lens, considering the pending permission for the deal.
Sorry, I wasn't able to hear the first part of your question. Can you please repeat?
So, the question is like, will there be any delay now in securing approval for any new product launch that we may want to do, given that IRDA will look at the entire transaction closely and till the time is done, they may like want to keep like move things slower?
I don't believe so. These are the product launches are business as usual, while an overall capital deal at a company level is on a different track. So I don't expect that.
Okay. And will there be any issue to HDFC Limited in terms of like the future holding, considering that they have recently diluted in HDFC Life? So in terms of their stake, any problems with that, do you see?
No, none at all.
And lastly, what is the movement in solvency with this transaction?
Shini, you want to take that?
Yeah, so their solvency is higher than ours. So we expect it to be broadly similar since their size is slightly, 10% of our size. But having said that, there is some cash payment expected to be part of this, to be paid out as part of this deal. So that might have a slight drop in the solvency. But we believe that the cash flows that the company generates will be sufficient to at least partially offset the drop in the solvency. But we believe it will be broadly similar to what, where we are now.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Just one question. On the EV accounting, whether we will add the EV line by line or there will be acquisition and creation of goodwill in the EV post merger?
Neeraj, you want to take that in terms of the accounting? I think you're talking about EV or you're talking about how the consolidation happens, because line by line means, are you referring to the book consolidation or embedded value?
Yeah, I'm more talking about EV. The EV of the merged entity will be just line by line number of EV, or in the adjusted network there could be a possibility of goodwill getting accounted.
No, so there are two different lenses, exactly like Vibha mentioned. So on the EV basis, it will be largely line by line. Of course, there will be methodology which will get completely aligned to one. Whatever adjustments need to happen for that will happen. But as you are aware, this EV has been reviewed by Towers Watson on a APS 10 basis. So there is fair amount of consistency in terms of what we would be doing at our end. As far as on the accounting side is concerned, there are options that are being evaluated as we speak in terms of how to recognize the transaction, because all of that is anyway subject to regulatory approval and later on court approval. So we'll find the due treatment in the next few weeks.
Sure, and just one more question if I can add. Is on the agency side, so these agents will be automatically transferred to HDFC Life company, or they will require to take IRDA examination again to become a part of HDFC Life agency?
No, we don't believe that they will require to be recertified.
Sure. Thank you.
Thank you. Participants are requested to please limit your question to one per participant. The next question is from the line of Rishi Jhunjhunwala from IIFL. Please go ahead.
Hello, just a couple of quick questions. One was, you mentioned that you'll be able to bring the margin levels for Exide to your HDFC Life level over the next 12 to 18 months post the merger completes. Just wanted to understand, is the difference between both of them only the high cost ratios and the product from a profitability perspective is largely similar otherwise?
Yes, it is largely similar, except for persistency. So the persistency, like I mentioned, 13-month persistency is hovering around 75% versus on much higher number of 90%. But as that starts going up, at least on new business, margin should start converging once scale economies flow in.
Sorry to interrupt. May I request Mr. Rishi Jhunjhunwala to please rejoin the queue? We have participants waiting for their turn. Thank you. The next question is from the line of Madhukar Ratta from Elara Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. First, can you repeat the channel mix again? And second, you also mentioned that you are adding a lot of cooperative bank relationships. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
Yeah, so the channel mix that I talked about earlier is agencies about 60%, brokers about 23%, corporate agents is about 7, and direct about 10. I did not mention that they are adding a lot. I said they have some relationships, like SVC, for example.
Yeah, what I meant was that you would add them as a result of this merger.
And given their strength in the South and also amongst categories like that, yes, as in post-regulatory approval, we will of course want to make inroads into geographies and in relationships that we haven't for whatever reason been present or have not got there or have been more metro focused and so on.
Got it. Most of my other questions have been answered. Thanks a lot for this.
Yeah, and just add on there is that more than 60% of their business comes from tier 2 or 3. So that also is an interesting aspect for us.
Right.
Thank you.
The next question is from the line of Ajox Fredericks from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, ma'am. I have just one question. They have 60% plus in tier 2, tier 3, and we can obviously see that in protection pricing. They're very expensive out there. They have a higher share of protection also. So once you have onboarded them, how will our pricing dynamics move versus what we have right now on your term? And will a higher price impact our demand going forward? That's my question. Thanks.
So I would say you know, that we are some way away. They do sell predominantly ROP, and that's also something that we sell. So so it's not that it is completely an area that they sell something we don't, and so there's a very different strategy. That's not the case. I think we're some way away from it, like I mentioned. What we know is that the product strategy and outreach is not something that, like I said, it's not apples and oranges. It's very much in the zone. And we'll have to calibrate it as we, through our clean teams and until we get regulatory approval, to some extent, be on the back burner. And thereafter, for us to be able to look at for what kind of new distribution relationship, new from HDFC Life's point of view, what is the product suitability, what are typically persistency ratios, what is the charge extraction, margins, you know, all of that. So that homework will happen over a period of time. But from a diligence point of view, we believe that it's very much in the zone of the kind of products that we have today.
Thank you. That's it for me.
Sure.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nishit Chavate from Kotak Securities Limited. Please go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Nishit.
Hi. Just a couple of questions. You know, one is that are we really, you know, what kind of adjustment to EV are we expecting, you know, when you kind of sort of actually, you know, sit across the table, any broad assessment, you know, given the fact that somewhere the basis could be a little different. If you put some color on that. The second is, you know, how do we think about the IRR of the deal? And the third would essentially be that, you know, for this particular company, or this becomes maybe an SBU now within HDFC Life, what kind of, you know, what maybe proportion or percentage of cost reduction should we really see so that, you know, your nominal margins are equal to the net margins.
Yeah.
The net margins are equal to nominal margins.
Yeah, you know, on your first question, we don't expect any significant adjustment to EV. Maybe 5%, up to 5%, anything between 1 to 3%, something like that, as we get, if at all. It's not that we know of something, but supposing some mortality experience given COVID or aspects like that. So don't expect a material impact to the EV. On cost reduction, just in terms of numbers, you know, they are somewhere around 20% overall cost to revenue, and we are in the zone of 12-13%. So it should normalize closer to our numbers.
Sure. And how do we think about you know, the IRR of the deal? I mean, when you, I guess, you know, when you started evaluating it, how do we think about it?
This is IRR for us or for the seller?
Yeah, that's right. So when you, I'm guessing you would have kind of looked at this company or, you know, some other companies. When you looked at IRR of this deal at this valuation, you know, how did you think about it?
Without giving out too many, because ultimately a deal is a commercial closure, right? So this is value accretive for us. And that's how we saw it in terms of if we were to, after taking the steps, and like I mentioned, 15 odd months after it becomes our subsidiary, for us to be able to eke out those synergies makes it fairly value accretive. Of course, it's 10% of our business, but that business is value accretive. Also, the multiples, like I mentioned, are at a discount to listed peers, significant discount, and thereby very much in zone. So there is a cost synergy. There is, more importantly, a productivity synergy. Or productivity upside that comes in. So all of that put together was accretive, and that's why we're looking at. But, you know, can't really share in terms of underlying, because that might be a starting point, but then there are negotiations.
Perfect. Congratulations on the deal and all the best.
Thank you, Nishant.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Avinash Singh from Emkay Global. Please go ahead.
Yes. Hi, good morning. Again, going on valuation, I mean, of course, as you mentioned, it's at a material discount versus listed peers. But those listed peers have a different kind of profitability, a brand, and most importantly, the bancassurance distribution. Now, here, if I were to look at Exide Life, probably the quality of EV is not comparable to them or to yours because a large part, I mean, the risk would be relatively lower. Additionally, I mean, if I look at the market structure of life insurance side, probably beyond the top eight, almost the rest of the 14, 15 players are struggling and kind of available for sale. So, I mean, it's a more or less buyer's market. And within that also, there would not be many of the top eight who are currently interested or have the ability to buy out. Now, under these circumstances, I mean, how do you see this valuation? And then the next question connected to this is that, okay, if you see that Exide Life acquisition is adding value, then there are, out of those 14, 15, there are many names. So are you still open to looking out for the more deals? Thank you.
Okay, I mean, just to put things in perspective, you know, while this deal is still a long way away in terms of regulatory approvals, you're aware there's no deal that's happened in life insurance yet. And there are multiple reasons for that. We have articulated our considerations for a deal, and I would suppose that would be for any rational player in terms of a good quality back book, distribution franchise of quality, as well as, you know, possibility to do a deal given shareholding structures that could be prevailing in different companies. So there are reasons why deals have not happened yet. And when you look, put that in perspective, for us, organic growth is something that we have been doing reasonably well at, and inorganic is a way to kind of complement that, as Vibha mentioned. Is this going to be a strategy for us on an ongoing basis? I guess short answer is yes, but we need to be very cognizant of all the steps that are involved in a particular transaction, and we'll take things in due course. And we obviously keep scanning the market for opportunities from time to time. We have continued to do that, and we'll do that in future as well. To your earlier point in terms of quality of the book, I guess it is always a challenge when, for unlisted players, not too much is available in the public domain. So you do end up making judgment calls based on limited information that's available. Having conducted due diligence and taking comfort from an external review of the quality of the back book that has been certified, we believe it's a fairly high-quality business that's being built. There are considerations on scale, which, like you rightly articulated yourself, at a combined entity level, a lot of those constraints will not apply. And that's where the synergies would come in over a period of time.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this will be the last question for today, which is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, and thank you for taking my question. Just one, I'm just looking at agent numbers for Exide and HDFC Life over the years, right? Fiscal 2017, both of you had a similar number, around 53,000-54,000, and you've grown at 20%, and they've declined 9% CAGR, right? Last 3 years have been pretty stuck. So given the rationale for the deal is a large part on agency, if you can talk a little bit about what's happening there, why have they seen this kind of a decline, and, you know, maybe possibly going forward, how can this be turned around?
Suresh, you want to take this one?
Yeah, I think that will work. Yeah, so hi, you know, I think there are two parts to the overall agency business. One is the incremental number of active agents who we are recruiting. The second is the productivity that we are able to kind of get from all the agents who have been previously onboarded. Now, you know, at Agency Life over the last 4 or 5 years, we've been working on the agency model quite extensively.
both in terms of new acquisition and two in terms of getting the productivity of the existing agents. Now, you know, we've learned a lot in terms of how we need to onboard and how we retain and keep them active. The way we look at this business is that, look, there is always an opportunity to grow the agent base. And the equation is fairly simple. You know, you need to get more agents, you need to get more active, and you get to get a higher productivity. The overall value proposition in terms of, you know, what kind of products do you sell? How do you train the agents? How do you make sure that, you know, they remain active with you? They work on their customer base. Which is one of the reasons we are not so concerned in terms of that active agent base. We do believe that once we come in, we will be able to work with them and try and also increase their active agents as well as the customer for the active agents. We've learned that model. In fact, you know, we had mentioned this in one of our earlier discussions. We run this whole program called Agency Life, which is about actually looking at all the agents in terms of how do they engage with the insurer. We do believe we can replicate some of these programs. So, of course, for us, the market is large. We have not, while, you know, almost 26% of our agency business is also in the South for active agents. We do believe that this will give us an incremental 15% growth in that particular market. And once our product range comes in, once our programs come in, it will lead to a cycle where we not only get their productivity higher, and hopefully we are able to onboard customers through their sales team. So these are things we frankly, you know, for us is incremental, and that's the way we have been looking at it. Past, really, we can't do much in terms of how much incremental financial consultants they have been able to board, but we are fairly confident given our overall brand, given our product proposition, we'll be able to correct that as we go forward.
Thank you, and all the best. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, as this was the last question for today, I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Vibha Padalkar for closing comments.
Thank you. We would like to thank all of you for participating in today's call. We'll keep you updated on the progress of this transaction. In the meanwhile, if there are any further questions, do reach out to Kunal Jain of Investor Relations. Thank you and stay safe.
Thank you. On behalf of HDFC Life Insurance, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us, and you may now disconnect your lines.